Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Today, as we close out season three, just days away from Father's Day, we continue with our focus on dads and their unique relationship with chronic illness. In this episode, we meet Chad, husband and father of two, balancing all his roles as a dad while living so much of his lifetime under the umbrella of an epilepsy diagnosis. This is Chad.
My name is Chad Riggins. I'm a husband, and luckily, I'm a father of two, beautiful boy and girl. What I enjoy in life outside my family is spending time either backpacking or rock climbing. I have frontal lobe seizures, and so I have trouble remembering things, especially people's names, recalling events. Now, I can remember things that's happened several years ago, but current events and stuff like that, and things that you think you should know. My brain, typically on average at about 4:20 in the morning, it stops for a few seconds, 4 or 5 seconds, then turns itself back on. So they can't figure out why it does that. How come, you know, because it shouldn't be able to turn itself back on once it stops. So all brain activity stops for a few seconds and then kicks back on. And then I have seizures typically happen.
Your condition, do they classify it as epilepsy?
They do. Epilepsy is a general term. I used to think it was like a specific illness. No, it's a general term for seizures that they can't link to to something specific. And that goes to my case. Now, they have it has been brought to my attention. Since I moved to Austin, you know, I've life has been easier and life has been different. I mentioned earlier, you know, that, you know, I had issues, you know, I definitely had a speech impediment growing up, and, you know, back home, everybody would stop you. Where are you from? Where are you from? You sound different. Where are you from? You meet people. Here, you know, I just blend in. Nobody notices it. But, you know, back home, nobody thought anything about having a concussion, a kid having a concussion. You know, I had, I think I had 19 concussions prior to, you know, becoming an, you know, adult, 18. Then I had several concussions afterwards. I didn't think nothing about it. You know, that was everybody. The only person that thought that was an issue, you know, was my wife. But then, you know, you go see the neurologist and they point out that's an issue and that could have possibly be what caused.
You are under the umbrella of epilepsy, but it definitely has its unique forms for you. Do you want to share a little bit about when you first realized you had seizure activity and what that looked like?
Yeah, I was lucky enough. I sleep on the couch so I could hear where our house is situated. If I'm sleeping in me and my wife's bedroom, you cannot hear anything that goes on in my kids' bedroom. So especially when they're young, I tended to sleep on the couch so I could make sure I heard my boy had an issue. If my daughter had an issue during the night, I could respond. Anyway, it was one of those nights. And the next morning I woke up and I kind of felt like I was kind of intoxicated is what it felt like. And so about through my day, just think, okay, this is just kind of old age or one of those things, nothing to worry about. And got in my vehicle and had a hard time figuring out how to start my car. That kind of seemed odd. And then going to work, you know, I've driven that way before many times. And I, you know, have a little bit trouble finding my way and driving my vehicle. And it's kind of one of those, moments. Then when I got to work, it really became interesting because I could not figure out at all how to start my computer. You know, and it's one of those embarrassing moments. You don't want to go ask somebody else, hey, do you know how to start my computer? Because, you know, it's something that I've always done. And as a functioning adult, you should be able to start your computer. So finally, about 30 minutes of trying to figure it out, I had to go to my boss. And someone embarrassed said, hey, you know, something's wrong. I can't figure out, you know, start my computer, turn on my computer. And I think I need to go home. Something is off. So, you know, contact my wife and went home. And I set up a neurology appointment, and they had several things they could find. Of course, they ran a scan, and, you know, they found certain issues, and I have a hard time recalling. And, for example, it really became an issue trying to prescribe the medications and everything. You know, I got lost once. Now, I'm a person of habit. Unless I'm forced to, I typically do the same routine over and over again. So I have a set way to come home from the office and pass through this neighborhood, and I got lost in that neighborhood and could not figure a way out. And finally, that was kind of upsetting. I had to call my wife. I didn't want to be on medication. I just thought it was going to be a temporary thing. I was, you know, really I was refusing to believe because I didn't want to see changes in my life, like things I like to do, like the climbing and, you know, the running and backpacking and stuff. And also it's embarrassing because simply it is embarrassing, especially have to notify mm-hmm. your wife that, hey, I'm lost. I can't find my way out. And, you know, this neighborhood yeah. you drive through, it's only a few minutes. And then this probably a short time later, I got lost going to Home Depot. And in our neighborhood, you know, it's Home Depot is only like 3 or 4 miles, maybe a little further. And I got lost in our neighborhood. I was driving around, could not find a way out. And there's several ways to exit our neighborhood, so you should at least find an exit. And couldn't have stopped and called my wife, hey, can you come pick me up?
I think it's also probably anxiety-inducing to not all of a sudden not know where you are.
Right, and it's kind of scary because the fact that you're totally lost. You recognize things as you drive through. I guess the best way to put it, it's kind of like you hear about the elderly individual with dementia. It's kind of my diagnosis kind of plays the same thing. When I speak to people a lot of times, and days vary. Some days are better than others. For example, I've got a new executive director, and speaking to her, you can just kind of tell when people, in your own mind, it's kind of making sense, but just based off the individuals you're talking to, they don't have a clue of what you're saying. And these are things mm-hmm. that I've been doing in this current job. I've been there for about 15 years. These are things that, you know, don't even have to second guess, and I'm having a hard time describing or generally coming up with words. I know what I'm wanting to say. I know how to say it, but just coming up to it, like particular words, like, for example, pencil. I know what a pencil is. I cannot come up the word pencil. And that happens quite often. So that's it. Yeah, it's embarrassing.
And this is true of what we hear with any dad or mom that we talk to that has anything neurological. You can't see those deficits always. Like if you had a stroke and had a limp or had a facial droop or some sort of paralysis, people would know like, oh, this might be related to that. But because it's on the inside, nobody knows. Like nobody, they just might think, wow, you're having an off day. Or,
and this is sad to say, I generally pick up if it's new people I meet, they have no, you know, they didn't know me beforehand. Yeah, they think there's something else going on that, they definitely think something else going on that, and they don't, how can I say it? And I guess I could say it like this. When I was growing up, I had issues. They told my mom that I'd never be able to dress myself. I definitely had to have physical issues. And I couldn't do jumping jacks and stuff like that. And so you learn to pick on those cues when people, you know, they're thinking that you have certain special needs and this is the way it's always going to be for you. And they treat you different. And I definitely pick up on that now.
Sounds like maybe some of your needs kind of presented earlier. Did you have issues when you were younger?
Yeah, I did. Back in the 90s, you know, my family just put off as, you know, weird kids. Generally, when a kid would make fun of another individual, or you'd see it like on Saturday Night Live, they would make somebody had a seizure, you know, the head tilted to the side and the eyes kind of rolled back and their arms jerked up. I would do that for a period of like, I'd be in a normal conversation 2 or 3 seconds, just out of the middle of blue. And I had no idea I did it and just, you know, continue on my sentence or whatever I was doing, you know, of course that happened at school and stuff. And it presented itself in the 90s really bad. And, we went to a neurologist, and of course, they couldn't figure out what was going on. They put me on medication. And at that time, you know, I happened pretty much all the way through into college and out of college. And I just stopped doing my medication. And of course, it stopped doing it. But, you know, they never found it. And then you forget about it. You know, it's just one of those things. If it's brought up, you kind of, oh, yeah, that happened. But you forget about it. We didn't want a true diagnosis, because I wanted to go into the highway patrol or go into law enforcement of some sort. And you're not going to get hired if you're, you know, if you've been actually diagnosed with having seizures of any kind. So, so I went totally off the medication, and that was a reason why. And at that time I was also into powerlifting and stuff like that. And so when I was on my medication, and you experience this now, on my current medication, I just now learned to live with it, is that when you're on your medication, there's definitely a difference in your physical strength, your physical ability.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. When I'm off my medication for a long period of time now, I'll easily drop like 10 pounds of body weight. And then when I start taking my medication, and also with my strength, because, you know, I rock climb and stuff like that. How can I state this for you? Okay. This is how I'm going to say it as far as there's grades that you climb. And let's say right now I'm climbing at 12D. So that'd be like running probably about a 6 minute mile. In a 5K, you're averaging about 6 minute mile. So when I'm on my medication, that drops down to 7:30, 8 minute mile.
So you don't feel physically fit, yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a difference in how, you know, what your body's able to do. And so as a man, you know, that's something you have to live with, and that is actually hard to do.
Especially when what your biggest love is for a hobby involves so much strength and conditioning.
Right. Yeah, and you know, competing and stuff. I mean, competing and hanging out with individuals, other men that are climbing or working out at that certain level, and, you know, and because of a medication that you need to take, you're not able to perform or hang with those guys at the level they want to. You know, over time, if you're not able to produce, you know, there's people that you believe are your friends or you perceive that you're friends as an adult. And as a man, you know, your friendship revolves around your activities. You know, I've noticed different my wife that, you know, she's a teacher and she will make a friend with a parent, and she's friends with that individual all the way, you know, even after their child has, you know, graduated from college, they still keep in some kind of touch. Well, as a man, you know, you have obligations, and making time for that individual that's not revolved around your activity, you know, it's just not going to happen based on my experience. That's been hard to get used to.
So you have these connections with people maybe at work or with climbing or with your kids' sporting activities, but then when you can't engage in a way that you did before, essentially those friendships kind of start to go away.
Right, exactly. Matter of fact, I was supposed to go climb today. No.
Mm-hmm.
They found somebody better to climb with. But anyway, that is what it is.
Yeah, but that's hard. That's definitely hard. And especially because you know that you're capable, it's just...
Right. And, you know, and I guess one of the things about my issues in regards to that, you know, and as any man that has a family, your primary responsibility is to your family, because those are truly your friends. Those are truly people, regardless of where you're at in life, you're going to have a connection and link to.
Yeah.
But, for example, I was talking to my wife about this earlier today. Before the seizures started, now they started prior to 2019, and here's an example. I cannot think of the actual date. But in any case, I was able to do my work and do it with no issues. Wouldn't even have to double check, and I'd be able to do listen to YouTube, watch videos, listen to podcasts, and have conversations with other people I work with, and not even skip a beat, not even think twice about it. And now I have to totally isolate myself and really concentrate on what I'm doing and still make mistakes and not be able to produce at the same level or at the same speed I was able to do it before.
And I'm sure that everyone around you may not be aware of that, but you have that awareness. And I'm sure that is very frustrating.
Well, I think people are aware of it at work. They don't connect it to, like you said before, they don't connect it to any kind of a disability or any kind of, you know, seizures. They just think, okay, this is the level this guy works at. You know, he's going to be a problem child. He's not producing at the level we'd like him to produce at. And, you know, and you become aware of that, and you know that definitely reduces your ability for promotion and everything else. And that gets frustrating because, yeah, you know what you're able to do, but yet, well, I now know what I'm able to do. What I was able to do is no longer me.
It's grieving who you were versus who you are now.
Right.
What's so interesting to me about your illness is that the way that it kind of comes in episodes, like you'll have it really strong in the 90s, and then it just kind of goes away for like 20 years and then reappears when you are well established in your work career and married and you have kids. That to me seems so hard also, because you never know when you're going to have almost like, I hate to say relapse, but almost like an episode when it's going to flare up.
Now, I've been lucky. I've been blessed that it hasn't occurred, but when it first started occurring, it was occurring every few months. The way it's explained to me, it's kind of like a horseshoe. Generally, people won't have any activity, and then they'll have it in around midlife. And then once they get past that phase of life, it does not occur again when they're elderly. It won't recur again. Or those individuals who have it early on in life, as they approach middle age, as they're in middle age, they don't have any activities. But then most likely they're going to continue or start to have those activities or see that again when they get older.
Your kids, were they aware that you had this when you were younger? Because clearly they didn't see it in their early years because you weren't having flare-ups.
Generally, my seizures 99% of the time, as far as I'm aware, they happen, you know, early in the morning, around, you know, before my kids get up. Unfortunately, one time I did have a seizure that happened in the afternoon, and my wife's taking a nap, my son's in his room, and, you know, my kids weren't aware of my past, and, you know, they heard that I've had seizures, you know, this has started up, but they have never actually seen one. And I was sitting in my daughter's room, and at the end of the bed, that's the last thing I kind of remember. And that's one thing nice about it. I don't remember anything, but it affects everybody else around me that witnesses it. All of a sudden, I believe it was my wife, heard this thumping on the wall. And she came to see what it was. And I had fallen off the bed, and I was having a seizure, and I kept hitting my head against the wall on the floor. But my little girl was just frozen with her mouth open. She was scared. And, you know, even after that, even after, you know, the episode went by, you know, my little girl had, there was a distance between her and me. I mean, where she was scared to be around me, essentially, I believe, because she's afraid that it would happen again. She didn't know how to respond. She didn't know what to do.
Yeah. It sounds like you had a grand mal seizure, which was a big fall. And those are scary looking.
I now prefer to sleep on the couch so my wife, if I have an episode, my wife doesn't see it. Because my wife gets scared, even though she's witnessed me have multiple events, as I like to call them, sounds better. She wants to contact the hospital. She wants to contact 911. The last time a doctor witnessed me having a seizure, well, they have to notify DPS. And, of course, I lose my license for a set period of time. So I lost my license for a year. And I work downtown Austin. So, you know, that puts the whole family at stress. You know, my wife has to leave the house earlier to go to work, to be able to drop me off. And then she's now responsible, which I was responsible for taking my kids at that time to a junior high, middle school. That fell on me. Well, now she's having to pick that up, deal on her plate. Of course, there's always a blessing in everything. You know, COVID had presented itself, so I was able to later work from home because I do inspections, and I wouldn't have been able to do my job if that had happened at a different time because I couldn't drive. I lost my license, and we have to do so many inspections a year. And so now, you know, the worry on my mind is if somebody calls 911 and I go to the hospital and there's a good chance I'm going to have a seizure in front of a doctor, I'm going to lose my license for multiple years. Essentially, I won't be able to drive. I think I may be wrong on this, but I think it's 10 years. I'm a liability on my family. I'm an extra weight that's put on my wife's shoulders. My wife will say something different because essentially I'm not working unless I'm able to walk to work or ride a bike. And that's definitely not happening in my profession or anywhere, you know.
And the mass transit is not, unfortunately, what we wish it could be.
Right.
It's not there for Austin. They don't have the infrastructure yet.
Right. And I'd never rode. The last time I rode public transportation was when I was a kid, and that was to go to the zoo. And so I had no idea. And, you know, the first time I rode public transportation, I missed my drop-off. And, you know, and luckily the driver was nice enough to didn't turn around, but stop and let me off. And she let me know that she's supposed to drive directly to the bus barn after her last stop. If anybody's on the bus still, they're on the bus still. Just learning to work through it. You know, little life changes like that that nobody thinks about. But then now all of a sudden, it's not a choice. It's a have to.
I mean, there's a lot of unknowns.
Right. And having to have a seizure, and you don't know how people are going to react or what's going to happen. And I know that I've had an episode while running. And luckily, I guess people... Because I know there was people on the trail. I don't know what the reaction was or whatever. I know how I found myself when I woke up.
Did they just run by? Did they just keep
going? I guess that's the assumption. Maybe somebody might have looked at me, assumed I was on drugs. And they just kept on, you know. You know, you want people to be empathetic with things, but in that situation, the blessing is I did not end up in a hospital.
So it sounds like you're still able to exercise and run, but are you able still to rock climb and backpack and...
Yeah, I mean, my wife, that again, your whole family, used to just head off by myself. My wife had really no idea where I was going because I do a lot of through hiking. So when I go backpacking, at a minimum, it's 100 miles and a lot of it's manway. So it's off trails. You're figuring out from point to point. And so, you know, my wife was first kind of sketchy about that. But then, you know, I convinced her, well, if I have a seizure, you know, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, eventually I'll come out of it and I'll be all right. First thing you do is try to bring it closer to home. For example, you know, things have changed. Like I said, there's harder to find rock climbing partners. So I've definitely adapted my garage. It goes up along my ceiling. It's basically a gym.
Oh, wow. That's so cool, and, though. That's a cool adaptation. Yeah.
And, you know, running and stuff, you know, I definitely suggest, I don't know if it helped on that day, but, you know, you can get your little metal tag and put on your shoe. So if somebody does care to be, you know, do the right thing, do the moral thing, they're going to, at least they know what's going on, who to contact. Yeah, you make certain changes like that. In my case, my wife knew how happy these things made me. I've been rock climbing for essentially 23 years. Backpacking about the same. Man, backpacking way longer than that. But you can't become a prisoner of your illness. You have to maintain that. Otherwise, for me, I could see myself becoming a recluse. And there's going to be funny things that happen and things you wish you didn't happen. I mean, there is a medication out there, and for majority of people now, I've been told that some people just can't tolerate medications. But for me, it was the third medication. My first medication, I believe it was, I'm out rock climbing. People are a little leery. You become that individual. You know, you talk to people, they're like, I wouldn't say that to people. But it's like you feel like you have a responsibility to tell people, hey, you know, I have seizures. And I was on medication, and during that medication, I had a headache. Well, I passed out on a rock climb. The person was expecting it. I think I said something, or they told me I said something. But again, it's just kind of, you know, and what's funny about it, I told them, you know, what to expect. They lowered me the rest of the way down, and they just pulled me to the side so they could continue climbing and figured, oh, he'll get better eventually.
Do you feel like your family has taken on a caretaking role with you, or do they you have your independence?
I mean, a caretaking role? Oh, yeah, my son. And, you know, and it's sad to say, it could be that, you know, he's fearful of what's going to happen. He's constantly reminding me, whether it be in the morning, you know, or in the evening, especially in the evening, he'll remind me, you know, he'll ask me twice, did you take your medication? Did you take your medication? Now, he takes meds. And, but on his mind, it seems like the forefront of his mind is whether or not his daddy took the meds that he needed to get him through the night and get him through the next day.
And he's trying to protect you. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it makes a difference. It makes a difference on what you do, where you go, your diet. You know, my son is very astute to what I eat. There's several little things that, you know, becomes a part of your day that you really have to think about. It's like, okay, because the changes have been in place, implemented so long, and that, but you know they're there. You know, like I said, like the vacation, you know, I used to take a vacation by myself to go backpacking, climbing, and now, and then I take one with my family. Now that's encompassed in one vacation. You know, my wife's definitely aware these situations happen when I'm tired or stressed. And a good example of this, I'm probably the only person I've known that's had COVID 3 times. You had COVID 2 weeks later after you were diagnosed with it, boom, you had a seizure. And I'm aware of it because then I really lose all of my strength. You know, when we get back to that analogy of running, I went, you know, running, you know, probably in the 5-minute mile, 6-minute mile on a slow day. So all of a sudden, I'm running a 12-minute mile. And so then, you know, the second time happened, you know, we paid attention and boom, the same thing happened before. And then, you know, the third time it happened again.
Now seizures are part of your recovery whenever your immune system is compromised.
Right, right. Yeah, because your body's totally run, you know, the stress thing, the your body's totally ran down. And at first my kids were embarrassed. You know, my daughter was afraid I was going to have a seizure at school. You know, they didn't want me to be a part of school events. I remember that, especially my daughter. You know, she's a young girl. She's definitely, you know, worried about what her friends think and all of that. You know, and that's just natural. That's tough to take. I don't take offense to it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But, she was worried. You know, what if I had a seizure in school in front of everybody?
Have your kids expressed to you a worry that this could happen to them?
No. No, they haven't. As far as I know, they haven't expressed it to me. There's no previous. The only thing that seems to run in our family that, you know, autism seems to be a kind of an issue. Things like that. But as far as seizures, no.
Even though kids, it's hard for them to see a parent with an illness, I really do think it grows them into such exceptional adults because they're empathetic, they're caretakers, they're compassionate, they're forgiving. I feel like I hate that you have had to deal with all of this hard. Kids, it grows so many strengths in them.
And I appreciate you saying that. You know, not to... I'll put it this way. You know, you want your kids to have adversity. Through adversity, your kids grow. I agree 100% with that. You know, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be the individuals we are today. I 100% believe that. But however, you don't want to be the cause of that. And that's the last thing I think when I have a seizure, when I had that. Nobody wants to put their family involved, you know, through this, and they don't, and they definitely don't want to be the responsibility. I would be able to handle it so much better. I hate to say it would have been my wife.
I know, and I do think that's unique. That is a unique struggle that a lot of dads have shared, is just as a society, it's more of the framework that the dads are that role of provider and caretaker, not always, but just as an old way of thinking, that's how it's been. But you're right. Even when you are out of it after having a seizure, the first thing you're waking up to is thinking, gosh, I hope I didn't do anything that made it harder for my kids or my wife. I mean, that you're still caretaking when you're out of it and completely depleted from that post-seizure fog.
And the worst thing, I think, for me anyway, and is the fact, and when you talk about this, you know, worried about could it happen again or anything, is the fact that I position myself in a field, I'm going to work for the state, I'm going to have a good retirement, be taken care of, you know, I'll be able to provide, you know, for my kids. But now, you know, it's the way, and I've prepared my kids for this, this is now a month-to-month job. I'm not guaranteed a paycheck next month. Dad could be unemployed for quite a bit, because nobody's out there hiring 50-year-old men for seizures, especially in my field. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, and that tends to weigh on me quite a bit as well. You are supposed to be a provider, the way I was growing up, in the way, you know, and you're supposed to, and your wife shouldn't be taking the brunt of that. And I know that's old world thinking, and I'm trying to move past that through a lot of things. But still, you know, you don't want to be that for your kids. You know, I don't want my kids to have to go through the situation. And this is nothing on, this is just me. This is nothing on anybody who could be listening, because everybody's situation is different. Every scenario is different. And we all find ourselves in hard times. I don't want my, you know, people to say, what does your dad do? Oh, he does nothing. He just sits around the house all day. My mom works to support our family, you know. And so if that comes, that's going to be a hard one. It is what it is.
What advice do you have for maybe a dad that's listening, that's new into his illness, or maybe had an illness and just kind of living along with it? Do you have anything to share for them?
It's going to get better, like anything else. And it, sometimes you lose sight of that, but it'll get better. You can't be stuck in the day. Definitely. And every little thing you can do, for me, that helped out a bunch, was trying to do the best I can to pursue a normal life, the activities and stuff. You have to prioritize or adjust. You know, I've had to readjust the level I hold myself to. But, you know, realize the main thing, when it's all said and done, your family's going to love you. They may be embarrassed of you at times, but they're going to love you and they're going to be there for you. Like, I do this for everybody. I mean, if you're really having a problem, you can feel free to get in touch with me. I don't mind that. If you can find a small group of people, whether, you know, whether it's like some kind of group, whether it's through church or some other outlet, people who are going through similar things or been through similar things, then you're going, you know, you are blessed. You know, if you can do that for yourself, that means a lot.
Yeah, and I'll link on our website, I'll link a local group for people that might have, I know there are a couple that are specific to dads, and so we'll make sure to include those in the links too, so that's an option for them to reach out to, because that's great advice.
Yeah, you don't want to find yourself in the past. I found myself in the past, and nobody has seizures. I mean, that's what it seems like. You seem like you're the only one, and, you know, you're just floating out in the sea, you know. So, finding somebody that does, or finding some kind of way to help you or guide you so you don't have to sit there and figure it out yourself, especially through trial and error, that means the world.
Well, I'm wishing you a happy Father's Day, and I hope that you get a time of doing some of your favorite things, maybe a climb with the kids or outside in nature. Unfortunately, it's going to be 107, but hopefully you still get to do some fun outside time with your kids this weekend.
Thank you. I appreciate that much.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.
We'll be right back.